Welcome to A Cult of Personality at acultofpersonality.net. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to A Cult of Personality, esoteric podcast extraordinaire. I'm your host, Greg Kaminsky, and you can find our website at occultofpersonality.net featuring an extensive archive of recorded interviews. A Cult of Personality podcast is made possible by you, the listeners, and by the subscribers to the A Cult of Personality membership section. This episode is also made possible by donations from Steve in the UK, Jason C., and Terrence. Thanks again. This episode is also brought to you by The Lifted Lance. The Lifted Lance is the official journal of Knights Templar Oasis, OTO. The Winter Solstice edition is now available, featuring original artwork, poetry, prose, reviews, and much more. A true celebration of Thelema and the season. Obtain your copy of The Lifted Lance for only $5. Send an email to info@knightstemplar-oto.org for details. Now, in episode number 137, our guest is Mark Flaherty. In 2004, Mark was diagnosed with severe chronic eczema that left him unable to function and in constant pain and discomfort. Western doctors were no help despite their advanced diagnostic techniques and treatments. As a last resort, he moved to the Peruvian Amazon rainforest to live among ayahuasca shamans. Shedding the Layers, How Ayahuasca Saved More Than My Skin is Mark's book that tells the story of his time in Peru and how he went from being a skeptic to understanding that there is so much more to life than he ever thought possible. Since his remarkable healing, Mark has become an astrologer and desires to share his story so that others may benefit from his journey. I realize that Mark and the subject of his book aren't exactly the standard fare here at A Cult of Personality podcast, but I think you'll find that Mark's story is relevant even to those who have little or no interest in ayahuasca as a healing modality or method of conscious awakening. Mark's story is unique and the lessons he learned along the way are applicable. I hope you enjoy this interview as much as I did. You can find Mark's website at shedding-the-layers.com. Mark Flaherty, I want to welcome you to A Cult of Personality podcast. It's a pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you, Greg. It's a pleasure to speak to you too.
Thank you. And you've recently published your book called Shedding the Layers, How Ayahuasca Saved More Than My Skin. And that'll be the primary focus of our conversation today. But for people who don't know you and your work, could you just give us a brief bio?
Yeah, well, I'll keep it brief. But so I used to work as a computer programmer. I was a very logical, rational, skeptical kind of guy. And then several years ago, I developed a severe illness. It was eczema, which is a skin condition, but an incredibly severe form of it, which covered my entire body. So pretty much all of my skin fell off. I was in complete agony day and night. I had this crazy sort of black, browny ooze that would come out of my skin. And so I was sick, really, really sick, and the doctors couldn't help. And I tried all kinds of alternative therapies like acupuncture and Chinese herbs and different diets and hypnotherapy and Reiki, you name it, I tried it. And none of those worked. And in the end, I ended up moving to the Amazon jungle and living for several years with some ayahuasca shamans. And, you know, over the course of that time, they basically saved and completely changed my life. And, you know, through that, I came to write the book, which is the story of these years of my life. And as I say, everything changed. And now I work as a writer and also as an astrologer.
It's fascinating. Now, I don't want to put anyone off, but could you give us a sense of how severe your eczema was and why you were so desperate for even a treatment, let alone a cure?
Yeah. So basically, it was literally every inch of my skin. It was like I could feel it actually stemmed from the inside. So there was like this incredible heat inside my body. It was almost like an inferno raging. And it spread out to my skin. It was like the skin was almost my body's way of trying to get something that was in there out. And so it turned bright red all over. All the hair on my body fell out. Most of the skin fell off. There was this sort of yellowy, browny, thick ooze that would come out of my pores. You know, that it basically smelled of death. It was just like this decay, rotting, putrid smell. And you know, like every slight movement, if I moved my arm a few inches, it would be agony. The skin would tear. And so I spent about 12 months pretty much in bed the whole time, unable to move. Even wearing clothes was painful. The lightest, thinnest t-shirt, anything touching my skin, it was kind of like a poker, red hot poker touching me. And then it also itched nonstop, you know, all day, all night, just agonizing itching that there was no relief to it. I couldn't get at the source of it. I would scratch. You know, scratch and scratch for hours sometimes, and I would be bleeding, but nothing would stop it. And the itching, it really almost drove me literally insane. You know, I was going absolutely crazy. It wouldn't stop. Yeah, I mean, that's that's in a nutshell an idea of the severity of it.
So you were basically in hell for a very extended amount of time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was for the whole, you know, in total, we're probably talking around about 3 years or so of that level of pain and discomfort.
Wow. Now, could you talk a little bit about the process that led you to ayahuasca shamanism as a potential treatment for your condition?
Yeah, absolutely. And really, to answer that question, and how I ended up at ayahuasca really involves going back a little bit more into my past and my story, if you're happy for me to do that.
Yeah, by all means.
Okay. So, you know, essentially, if we take it back to, what, 2004, I was living in England working as a computer programmer and very dissatisfied with my life, basically. You know, on the surface, everything was good. I had a good job, you know, great friends, great social life, but something was missing and I didn't know what it was, but I was deeply unhappy, even though nobody else would have known it. Inside, there was just this sense of, I don't get life. I don't understand it. I'm, you know, looking for something. So, you know, initially, you know, a few years, this had been going on for some time, by the way. This is pretty much as long as I can remember my adult life. There was this sense of looking for something. And, you know, at first I tried hedonism, you know, I was into drinking lots of alcohol, taking drugs, thinking, you know, that's the answer. That's what I'm looking for. And it didn't really work. And so then I looked at a more spiritual route. You know, I started investigating Buddhism and meditation and Tai Chi and yoga and all these kinds of things. And, you know, I sensed that there was something in that, but it still didn't really do it for me. And so, you know, there I was working this job in London and just realizing, I was looking around my office thinking, well, I need to do something with my life. This, if I don't, you know, do something different, nothing's going to change. I'm going to be working here for the rest of my life, you know, still, you know, really quite unhappy. So I decided to go traveling, and I went to Latin America. I basically spent a year traveling from Mexico down to Argentina. And during that time, I had a good friend from home was living in Cusco in Peru at the time. So I went to stay with him, and he started telling me about this plant spirit that existed in Peru called ayahuasca. And my friend had always been very spiritual, and even though I was fascinated by his stories and listening to him, and, you know, I'd read a lot of stuff and the idea of spirits and, you know, something other than this normal, rational, logical 3D world, you know, I really wanted to believe in that stuff, but my computer programmer mind just wouldn't allow me. It was just like, no, that's can't possibly be true. It's almost like too good to be true or something. So my friend told me about ayahuasca, and instantly it was a weird thing. I kind of felt like I already knew about it, even though I'd never heard of it before. Something about it seemed familiar, and instantly I was like, I have to try this. You know, he was talking about his experiences of connecting with spirits and communicating with spirits, and, you know, I just felt like this, I have to find out for myself if there's any truth in this. So I did, and, you know, I ended up drinking ayahuasca in Peru while I was there, and it was a very profound experience, which, you know, it on the one hand shattered a lot of my understandings and beliefs about life, but by the same token, it actually began this process whereby it was on leaving there and going home when I suddenly got really sick with the eczema. It was almost like that first visit to the ayahuasca and those first ceremonies kickstarted this process, which I now look at as it bringing the illness out, forcing me to go through this experience in order to change my life and to eventually bring me everything I'd been looking for in life.
Now, obviously, in our times, ayahuasca seems to be gaining popularity quite a bit. And there's oftentimes this idea that it's similar to any kind of other psychedelic drug experience. I think because of its nature, people compare it to like ecstasy or LSD or DMT, which I think is a similar ingredient. But what I am really interested in is the shamanistic healing aspect, because I think on some level there may be a danger that people seek out this experience as just another experience. You know, they're interested in stretching the limits of consciousness, of exploration, of being a psychonaut, as the common language terms it. And I think there's a vast difference between having a psychonaut consciousness stretching experience and a search and desire for real healing, which may bring about a true change in consciousness and personality. Could you just talk a little bit about that idea? You know, how do you see it? Is there really a separation, or are we just looking at degrees of something similar?
Good question. And I think you're right. I think that people use it for all of those things. And for me, as you mentioned, the shamanistic experience, for me, that is the that's the crucial factor in how you approach and use ayahuasca. You know, I know that there are many people around the world, in the US, in the UK, where I am, and many other places, that will drink ayahuasca on their own and have, you know, what you could term a psychedelic or a psychonautic experience. And, you know, what they get out of that, it's hard for me to really say because I haven't tried it in that context. But what I do know is that in terms of the tradition, you know, ayahuasca is from the Amazon jungle, and in that, in the tradition, the traditional way of using it, it's not just the ayahuasca brew itself that is required when you're talking about medicine and healing. It's the ayahuasca brew, the physical drink, plus the medicine shaman. And to be a fully, you know, to be a true medicine man in ayahuasca shamanism takes usually between 5 and 10 years of really intense apprenticeship. So, and the reason for that being that, you know, essentially to be able to practice medicine and for the shaman to hold that medicine space in which people can heal, they have to first purify their own body, which means letting go of all of their own issues, essentially. And if you don't do that, then you know, say you hold on to anger, for instance, or envy or something like that, the ayahuasca in a sense can exacerbate it, so those things can increase. And then, you know, because you become very powerful when you're working with ayahuasca, the shamans, and so if your intentions aren't pure, then you can actually do harm to both yourself and people in your ceremony. So excuse me, that's the reason why the training is so long. And it's also about them building their relationships to the medicine spirits. So these are spirits that live in the Amazon jungle, in the trees that go into the ayahuasca brew. And, you know, so it's through that relationship that the shaman has with the medicine spirits. Then when you're in the ceremony, they sing what are called ikaros, which sound like songs and are essentially direct commands to those medicine spirits to go into the participants' bodies and to move around them and to take out all the things that no longer serve them. So, you know, that can be, ayahuasca works on an energetic level. So, you know, to ayahuasca, physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual ailments all basically look the same. It's all just bad energy, if you like, or energy that no longer serves you. So when held in the ceremonial context with true medicine shamans, it is their relationship with the spirits that enables that healing to take place, which, you know, I would imagine you can't really get that when you're just drinking it on your own or having some, you know, other kind of experience. Like I say, I haven't done that, so I can't speak from firsthand experience, but that's how I would imagine it would be. And certainly the big difference is the, you know, the shaman in a sense is kind of like an intermediary between the medicine spirits and us as participants. So it's absolutely crucial when you're looking to do, you know, true healing work. Having said that, it's not the spirits doing all the work, you know, it's a real, it's a collaboration, if you like. So as a participant, it's the spirits' help, if you like, but it's ultimately you that has to purge whatever it is that you're looking to get rid of. You know, they can sort of show it you and take you to that point of being ready to let it go, but they can't do it for you. You know, the true healing comes from you, yourself being willing and ready to let go of, you know, whatever it is, you know, anger, sadness, you know, past traumas, whatever it is, you know, that sort of final step can't be taken by the spirits, if you like. It's you that has to do it.
That's very interesting. Now, would you talk a little bit about the cultural divide? You mentioned that, you know, these shamans in the Amazon, and they're in communication with the local spirits. From your personal experience, what was your sense of the division between you as, like, you know, from the UK, you're white, you live in like a more or less an urban environment, and going into the jungle with these shamans who were, you know, born and raised there in communication with plant spirits and animal spirits. It sounds like a complete and utter dependence on them and the ayahuasca in order for this healing to take place. And that's the sense I'm getting from talking with you and from reading your book.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There is, you know, that's why people travel to the Amazon, basically. And as you mentioned before, you know, ayahuasca shamanism and ayahuasca healing is becoming much more popular in the West. And, you know, they have that connection. They have that knowledge of the plants and the plant spirits. And to them, you know, this is second nature. To me and, you know, my Western psyche, initially, it was overwhelmingly strange, the whole thing. And, you know, I think to most Westerners, because it's so far out of the realm of our normal daily lives and how we've been conditioned to understand the world. But, you know, to these guys who grow up in the jungle, this is just normal. This is, you know, this is to them, talking to spirits is as common, really, as, you know, us talking to our friends or family. You know, I'd say it's probably changing a bit now as the world is changing and getting smaller in a sense. And there is an infiltration of the Western world, even into the Amazon jungle. But, you know, for those who are sort of still out in the jungle itself and still maintain that connection, then they basically have such a completely different way of understanding the world. And I know from talking to Don Alberto, who was the main Peruvian shaman that I was working with, he doesn't really understand the Western psyche. You know, we come there with so many questions and trying to understand it logically and rationally. And he's, in a sense, he's a very simple man in that the answers he gives are very straightforward. And, you know, myself and many other Westerners that came there would have these long, complicated philosophical questions. And he just didn't really get them. You know, he's just like, well, this is how it is. You know, it was his direct experience. He knew this was how it was. And he didn't have to think about it in a sense or try and provide, I don't know, some sort of mental framework of understanding for what was going on, because he just went by his direct experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Now, I'm familiar with there some religious organizations or churches that use ayahuasca as basically I want to say sacrament. I don't know if that's really the proper term. What's your opinion of that? Is it much different from the traditional ayahuasca healing? And do you see any danger in looking towards a psychoactive substance like ayahuasca as basically kind of like the impetus or the actual prime mover for the religious experience, instead of you know, unfolding this sort of inner consciousness in our relationship to the universe that kind of is already there naturally. And and what I'm getting at here is there are many systems throughout the world that sort of tap into this conscious nature that we have by stilling the mind and the body and going within and kind of unfolding this very gradually, whereas ayahuasca seems like it's, you know, pouring gasoline onto a little flame type of thing. And I just wonder your thoughts about that. Is this something that you are in favor of or not, or do you have any feelings about it?
Yeah, well, you know, my first thought on that is really that ayahuasca is a tool. So, you know, it can be really beneficial in sort of opening the door to a different perspective on life, if you like. And as you say, ayahuasca can't give you anything that you can't get from anything else. You know, there's many different systems and practices, some that use plant spirits, some that don't, you know. And from my understanding, the same truths are at the core of all of these things. And so ayahuasca is just an alternative way of doing it. And it's certainly not for everybody. You know, it seems to me that pretty much everybody that I've spoken to who have been involved with ayahuasca, it's like when they heard about it, it was something that spoke to them on a deep level, and they all felt very quickly or immediately that this is something that I need to do. And, you know, it might have taken that person 10 years before they actually came to ayahuasca, but it was something that just felt right to them for some reason. So, you know, I say anyone that feels called to do it, to try ayahuasca, great, you know, but at the same time, be advised that it's not like, oh, ayahuasca is the right answer or the best answer. You know, it's another tool into accessing something that's widely available in many different practices and, you know, even in normal daily life. When it comes to the groups like the Santo Daime, which is one of the Christian churches which originated in Brazil, which works with ayahuasca. Again, I only know about their ceremonies from talking to people who have been involved with them, but it does sound like a completely different experience to the traditional ayahuasca shamanism. You know, you have no Ikaros as such with the Santo Daime, and you have no shaman, but the people that I spoke to still spoke very highly of it, in terms of it having the potential to produce a profound experience and a profound connection to spirits, albeit in a more sort of Christian context, if you like. So, you know, personally, I feel like whatever works for people is all good. You know, I don't really feel like it's my place to say that ayahuasca should only be used in the traditional context. You know, if people find benefit in these other ways, then great, you know, use it. Personally, I wouldn't want to do it that way. Personally, you know, I've had such a deep, profound experience through the traditional shamanism that for me, that would be the only context to drink ayahuasca in. You know, and even I know of groups in the UK that will serve ayahuasca, but you know, it just doesn't appeal to me. You know, maybe people get benefits out of it, but you know, it's like I know what works for me, and I wouldn't want to risk anything with it, because, you know, it's so powerful, and ayahuasca can have a dangerous side as well. You know, a lot of people, and I, when I first heard of it and first came to it, thought ayahuasca is just medicine. It's all good. But really, the ayahuasca itself, you know, you could look at it as being impartial. It opens the space and connection to the spirit world, if you like. But what actually takes place then depends entirely on the context and what's going on. So, you know, when you've got the well-trained medicine shaman, then it's all good, because they provide the protection which keeps you know, malevolent spirits, if you like, out, and it's all just healing and medicine. But if you haven't got that, if you're just drinking on your own, then, you know, there is a danger that other things can come in. And, you know, maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't happen. But for me, you know, I profoundly respect the incredible power and efficacy of the ayahuasca, and so it's not any kind of risk that I would like to take.
Thank you. And just to follow up on this, I think in our times, and particularly within the realm that is often termed New Age, there's a danger of equivalency, which I see as looking at a wide variety of different religions, spiritual traditions, and practices, and making them equivalent on some level. Obviously, they're different to many degrees, but there's been this idea put forth that ayahuasca or other entheogenic pursuits, aside from the healing benefits that I think are clearly relevant, but if we put those aside for a moment, sort of as a path towards self-realization or enlightenment, as people like to call it, what's your opinion? Is there a vast difference between mysticism in the West or even in the East that involves long years of practice, meditation, ritual, on and on, clearly, you know, a lot of devotion and time for the practitioner versus ayahuasca or other entheogenic experiences, which may, to the superficial observer, provide an equivalent, if you will, type of experience without all of the hard work and devotion involved.
Right.
To me, it seems like they're worlds apart, not only in the results, but in the idea that I can purchase an experience or take a substance to kind of bypass all of this work that people throughout history have undertaken in order to change their consciousness, essentially.
Yeah, it's a great question. The first thing I would say about that is that, you know, ayahuasca can produce fast change, but in a sense, it's not like cheating or sort of bypassing anything, because the ayahuasca experience for me was incredible. And again, I can only talk about my own personal experience, but it was incredibly intense. And it's like you can't skip steps, if you like, but you can do a whole lot of work in a short space of time, because essentially, you know, ayahuasca can open you up to this space which doesn't work linearly. So in a sense, that time doesn't exist there, or time works differently in the ayahuasca space. So you can face and have to deal with, you know, a million issues in one evening. Kind of sometimes simultaneously, sometimes one after another, after another, after another, really fast. So, you know, the point I'm getting at really is that you're doing the same amount of work as through the other practices. It just all happens in a shorter linear space of time, you know. So, I mean, that's why certainly my own experience, it was... say one ceremony which lasts 4 hours was 4 hours of pure terror that felt like maybe 2 weeks, because it was just, you know, fear and anxiety and all these things, one after another, all coming up, forcing me to, you know, to look at them and to release them. So, you know, in a sense, I wasn't, it's not like ayahuasca is cheating. It's not like a shortcut to something, but in a sense, you know, in when you're relating it to linear time, if you like, it can seem like you can advance more quickly than in the other practices. But essentially, I would argue that you're doing the same amount of work, just in a shorter space of time. The second point I want to make about this is that, you know, really, my situation was unique in that I spent a long time there doing a lot of ceremonies, one after another, in, you know, as part of the physical healing process. But really, unless you're training to be an ayahuasca shaman, ayahuasca is not really something that you do all of the time, like maybe another spiritual practice would be. You know, in my experience, the best way and the most benefit comes from, say, going and spending a week there doing five ceremonies and then coming home and integrating that change. Because what happens in the ceremony is it's kind of like the energetic change takes place in you during ceremony, but you then have to step away from the ayahuasca to integrate the experience and have the changes unfold in your life. So, you know, in that sense, I don't really see it as being a sustainable spiritual practice, if you like, that you're going to be doing every day or every week throughout your life. You know, I see the most benefit is something that you really sort of dip into and out of, and then use the insights gained in those ceremonies to then help you in your daily life. You know, because there can be a danger of using ayahuasca almost as an escape from life, an escape from regular life, whereas really it's about helping you to live your daily life. And so, you know, you go back and you still have to go through the regular living process, if you like. And you know, so a lot of people that come and drink ayahuasca have their other spiritual practices, whether it's yoga or meditation, you know, whatever works for them. And so, you know, I would see ayahuasca as a, what's the word? Basically something to complement the other practices or your daily life of, you know, your daily living practice, not being a sort of a full spiritual path in its own right, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And you also, you know, for example, you practice yoga and astrology. Was that something that you came to after your ayahuasca healing?
Yeah, I mean, the astrology itself came directly out of the ayahuasca, actually, through one of the shamans that I was working with at this center in Peru. Was actually an English guy who's an incredible psychic and master astrologer for 25 years, and he'd had a shamanic calling and ended up, you know, doing an ayahuasca apprenticeship. And through him, I came to know astrology for the first time, really. You know, all I knew about it was the sort of daily horoscopes that you see in the newspapers and magazines. And I didn't give it much credit, you know. It was just, to my then logical, rational, skeptical mind, I couldn't see how it could possibly work. But through the ayahuasca experience, my understanding of life and how it works, you know, shifted quite dramatically. And from that perspective, combined with my friend talking to me about what astrology really is, which is, you know, a million times more in-depth and complicated than the horoscopes that you see in the newspapers, that isn't really astrology, it's just, you know, a bit of light entertainment. So those two things combined, you know, my new understanding plus a recognition of what astrology is, you know, it was really sudden, actually. It was towards the end of the healing journey. And suddenly I discovered astrology. I started reading books on it. And And instantly I was hooked. I knew, you know, there was no doubt. It was just this knowing of, oh, you know, this is it. This is my thing. You know, I'm going to be an astrologer. There was just, I had no idea about the sort of practical side of making a living out of it, but I had no doubt that this was my path. And, you know, just feel, it's kind of like it's a combination, really, astrology of the my old mindset of the sort of spatial patterns, logical, analytical side, combined with the intuitive side that I learned through the ayahuasca and that, you know, I continue to learn through practicing astrology. You know, it's really a combination of both of those, the left and right sides of the brain. And, you know, it works. It's really amazing. You know, people, I encountered a lot of people who are very skeptical about astrology and just dismiss it, but they have no idea what it is. And, you know, I would say anyone that really understands it and looks into it and tries it for themselves, you can't, well, you know, again, my own experience, I can't deny it. It works. And it's not scientific as such, but it works. And, you know, that it's undeniable.
Yeah, it's certainly my experiences seem to indicate the same to me as well.
Do you practice astrology yourself?
No, I more use it to try to learn about my reactions to the world around me and how to sort of navigate my own emotions and basically to try to be more in accord with what I sense are the larger forces that are at play or at right. work. I don't know if that's really a good description, but...
No, I'd say that's perfect because, you know, I would say the highest use of astrology is self-knowledge and self-understanding, you know, and it's an incredible tool for giving you a different perspective on, you know, why you act a certain way or react a certain way and, you know, ideas for how you can change that. And, you know, it's like in a sense the, like your birth chart is fixed. So certain elements of who you are fixed. But within that, there's all sorts of room for growth and change, you know, really from the lower sides of the signs and planets that are indicated in your charts to the higher side. You know, that's how I would see personal growth or spiritual growth, whatever you want to call it, as described by astrology. You know, we are a certain nature, you know, like I'm a Virgo, I'm never going to be an Aries. But within that Virgo, there's a whole spectrum of sort of behaviors and, you know, attitudes and ways of being in the world, which, you know, ultimately I can choose to embody the lower side or the higher side. But from my own experience, when I embody the lower side, life doesn't go so well. I don't feel very good. And, you know, it's hard work. But the more the higher side is embodied, you know, talking dualistically, the better life gets.
Yeah. No, I don't want to get off on a tangent here too much.
Yeah.
But one of the things that my rational mind has difficulty reconciling with astrology in particular, because obviously it seems accurate to a larger extent than I would expect.
I mean, it's a great point, and it does still work. And for me, that's the key thing. You know, there's different different forms of astrology, and the Vedic or the Indian astrology, which I haven't studied, but I do know that they follow sort of the position of the constellations as they are now, whereas Western astrology was fixed at that time. But, you know, why it works, I'm not sure I could give you an answer to that. But, you know, what I would say is that it's not, from my perspective, it's not really about the stars and the planets out there in space, but rather they are symbolic of energies within us. So, you know, it's one of the misconceptions about astrology is that it's sort of the planets affecting us or doing something to us here on Earth, whereas really they're simply symbolizing, you know, what is already happening inside us. And, you know, the reason that works, without, you know, getting too deeply into this, is ultimately because we're all one, we're all connected. And on that level, something that happens on the big scale, as in the macrocosm picture of the planets, is reflected in and describes the microcosm of a person. You know, it's something that Carl Jung talked about, and which he described as an acausal connecting principle, or synchronicity. So two things arising at the same time are related, but not in a cause and effect relationship.
Mm. Yeah, no doubt. And I think that the logical extension of these ideas is would result in something like Wilhelm Reich's idea. I think it was him who talked about, you know, that it's not so much that we're affected by the weather, but changes in consciousness actually cause weather, you know, in a sense. And this idea of consciousness and the inner and the outer being manifestations of the same thing.
Right.
We could probably go off on that for hours. But one of the things that this really brings me to in direct relation to your story is this idea of intuition and following what you believe to be the proper flow of the universe. Intuition was really crucial in your journey, and I just wondered if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the intuition was really... So this was before I'd moved to Peru, but after I'd had the initial experience with the ayahuasca. I was back home and, you know, I got really sick in the way that we described earlier. And, you know, I had this voice in my head that basically just kept saying to me, ayahuasca can help you, ayahuasca can help you. And, you know, my initial experience with it had been very difficult and very scary, and I didn't really want to go back. And so I kept trying the different alternative therapies back in the UK, you know, acupuncture and Chinese herbs, amongst other things. But they weren't really helping. And, you know, this voice wouldn't go away. And it was, you know, basically I just knew, something in me knew that I had to go back to Peru, that it really could help me. And, you know, this certainly wasn't a logical or rational decision. You know, something changed during that first week I spent with the shamans doing the ceremonies, in that, you know, my understanding just opened up a bit in terms of, you know, how life works. And I wasn't quite so linear and logical and rational anymore. And so, you know, it was a case of trusting this intuition, because, you know, on the surface, it seemed like a crazy thing to go and do. But I really, really believed or knew that it could help. And B, I had absolutely no choice. I mean, really, I was so sick and nothing else would work at all. The doctors couldn't do anything. So, you know, it was also a real act of desperation. You know, I knew it could help, but it was almost like life was forcing me to that point that I had no choice in order, you know, in a sense, to learn to trust my intuition more, you know, because I was so unintuitive, if you like, before that, it was hard for me to trust and believe this knowing voice. And so, you know, life took me to the point where I absolutely had to. And, you know, since then, I feel like I don't need such extreme lessons to listen to and follow my intuition. And, you know, I found that every time I've done that, it's worked out. And, you know, every time I do it, it gives me more trust in the process and more confidence to do it. And, you know, the logical voice in my mind that might be saying, this is crazy, this is stupid, it doesn't totally go away, but it gets quieter. And, you know, I put less less stock in that voice and more in the sort of direct knowing, if you like.
Well, I'd like to get back to the specific story of what happened to you.
Mm.
Because obviously you are, I don't know if I want to use the word cured fully, but the ayahuasca journey that you took, spending all that time in the jungle with the shamans, drinking ayahuasca multiple times in these ceremonies, it transformed you in such a way that your illness abated, more or less. Mm. Could you just talk a little bit about your thoughts on the intense healing process that you went through and why you felt compelled to share it with the world?
Good question. Well, you know, what I learned through the ayahuasca ceremonies really was that a large portion, or let's better said, I spent a lot of my life up until that point living in fear. I was basically scared of everything. It was almost like this stage fright of life, if you like. I was scared about what other people thought about me. I was just scared to be me, scared to act. You know, really felt really limited by fear. And the ayahuasca, you know, it showed me that for what it really is, you know. And it was, for instance, because it's a visionary medicine, you know, in some ceremonies I would see the a visual representation of the fear. So it would be, you know, like terrifying demonic faces, just like the most evil, like the craziest stuff that you've seen in any horror movie. That's what it looked like to me in there. And, you know, this was the stuff coming out of me, the ayahuasca was helping me to release. And so, you know, it was the lesson I really took from it was, more than anything, you know, there was a lot of different components to it, but more than anything, it was rooted in fear. And it was teaching me that there's no truth in fear. It was teaching me to face fear and to, you know, really sort of open myself out to life, to be myself, to learn to, you know, to have the confidence and the courage to be me. And so, you know, that was a significant component of the ayahuasca ceremonies. And so the book and why I felt the need to share the story was really, it was kind of a continuation of that process. So, and this gives a good indication of how ayahuasca can work, because, you know, in the ceremonies, I was sort of purging this fear and facing it and seeing it for what it was. But then you have to go into life and live the realizations and live as a different person, if you like. And so because the fear had been such a big thing for me, the book was really a process of confronting more fear and actually, you know, doing it in the real world, if you like, the physical world, of, you know, sharing a really quite intimate story and all my vulnerabilities and really sort of opening myself and putting myself out there. As a way of recognizing that there was no fear in it, there was no truth in the fear of it, because, you know, I was hearing all these voices of like, oh my God, what are people going to think of me, you know, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, recognizing that was the publishing of the book was my own journey through that fear. And then, you know, the response that I'd got since then couldn't have been more different to my thoughts about it, because, you know, people have been incredibly kind, said really nice things to me and written nice things about the book. And a lot of people have shared, you know, personal things with me that, you know, they've said, you know, I've never told anyone else this, but, and so there was something about the making myself vulnerable and opening myself up and putting myself out there that you know, people can relate to and resonate with and makes them want to share with me, you know, their own stories, because everybody has issues on some level, you know, it's just part of being human. And often we're taught that, you know, it's the world's a scary place and we should keep all our stuff to ourselves and, you know, not tell people that we're scared or sad or vulnerable or, you know, all of these things. So, you know, that's been a real beautiful part of the process for me is connecting with people in that way and, you know, them being able to sort of open up to me somewhat and share some of their own stories with me.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I just want to say that, you know, you've written a very personal book. It's your own story. What I found really compelling about it is exactly what you said, the vulnerability and overcoming the fear, because you were in a situation that was physically, emotionally, and mentally just extremely challenging, to put it mildly. I mean, that's a big understatement. Yeah. And to have the courage and the fortitude to turn around and travel across the world into a place where there were no guarantees, there was no real promise of change, and you went through your fear and followed your intuition and came out the other side a totally transformed person, not just physically, but also mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And regardless of what people may think of ayahuasca or the practice of using it or the popularization of it, I think your story is inspiring on a very human level in that way. And that's why I wanted to talk with you about it today.
Yeah, thank you so much. And you know, I think, you know, for me, it's like the human story, if you like, it's very similar. It looks different, but a lot of the issues fundamentally are the same. And so, you know, for me, it is really beautiful to reach that point of being able to share, even though, as you say, it's a very personal book. I think, you know, the feedback I've got is that people relate just to the emotions or the feelings or whatever that are involved in it, even though their stories might look differently. And, you know, one of the other big things for me is it showed me that, like, there's no way I thought I could have gone through this and done this. And, you know, it showed me that what I think I'm capable of is, and this goes for everybody, it's so much less than what we are capable of. You know, it's like when you're really up against it, you have no idea what you can do. And, you know, in a sense, it was only that extreme situation that forced me to be able to do this. You know, I was a completely different person before and so sort of closed down and scared of everything that it took something this big. But, you know, it goes for everybody and whatever they're doing in their life. You know, one of the things I learned from ayahuasca is life never gives you more than you can handle. You know, sometimes it gives you way more than you think you can handle, but you can always handle it. You know, we're all still here somehow, despite everything we've been through, and, you know, we always will be. And so, you know, it just gives that encouragement to keep going through the difficult times. And, you know, God knows we all have them, but they truly are there for a reason. You know, it sounds kind of cheap. And I used to hate that person in the office that would say, you know, like, it's not a problem, it's an opportunity. But I really do see life that way now. It is, because it is precisely these situations that enable us to grow and open up to more of, you know, who we truly are.
Indeed. Very wise words. I think this is a good place to wrap it up for this section. And if you could just remind people where they can find you online and how they can obtain your book, Shedding the Layers.
Yeah, well, my own personal website is called shedding-the-layers.com. So you can find and you can buy the book directly from myself there. It is also available in all the different digital downloads, so Kindle and for the iPad and Kobo and Sony Reader and Barnes and Noble Nook, all of those, and you'll find those on all of those relevant websites. And my astrology website, if you're interested in finding out more about that, is mark-flaherty.com. That's spelled F-L-A-H-E-R-T-Y.
And you offer a variety of different kinds of readings?
Yeah, there's a few different kinds of readings, which I do either via Skype or written reports. You can find all the info on the website.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, Greg.
In the Occult of Personality membership section, Mark Flaherty and I discuss the greater implications of the popularization of ayahuasca. He also describes the ayahuasca ceremony and what it's like to be transformed by the ayahuasca brew. Join us for that portion of the interview, and please remember that a Cult of Personality podcast is made possible by subscriptions to the membership section. Just go to occultofpersonality.net/membership and click the Join Now button. Thanks again for listening, and until next time.
About the sickness of the West, they say it's quite simple. You guys have severed your connection with spirit. Unless you reconnect with spirit and do so soon, you're going to bring the whole house of cards down around your heads and ours. And rightly or wrongly, they believe that ayahuasca is the remedy for that sickness. Sovereignty over consciousness. Thank you.